You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to this Arrivé episode from the Cycling Podcast Feminin. We are, of course, covering today what we call on the podcast the uphill cheese rolling contest, although that is probably a competition that Denny Gray certainly would rather be covering than Flesh Roll On, which is lucky that he's not here, isn't it? Because we got the number one fan. This is very rare for Flesh Roll On to have a number one fan, but I think it's an official posting, isn't it, Lizzie Banks? You are Flesh Roll On's number one fan.
I think I was Flesh Roll On's number one fan.
Oh, no! That was going to be my follow-up question, was if the edition today, which, of course, I should say, this is full of spoilers about exactly what happened in Flesh Roll On Fam. So if you don't want to know, then don't listen right now and go and find out and come back. But yes, I was wondering if it hit the checklist of things you love about Flesh Roll On today or not. Did it miss the mark?
Well, Rose, I'm feeling a little bit like a soggy waffle.
No, that's a terrible feeling. Well, you look much more, bright and ready to talk about the race than a soggy waffle does, it must be said.
I look better than a soggy waffle, but I feel a little disappointed, and please don't switch off straight away because we have lots of interesting things to talk about. But I feel a bit like a plonker after saying how interesting Flesh Roll On always is and how we usually have terrible weather that gives us this exciting racing. And it was a little bit of a flop until the last sort of 8 kilometres, I would say, today, which was good, actually, because we only saw 34 kilometres of the race, which was a little bit frustrating. But having said that, it was a very exciting finale, and I think it was actually one of the most open Flesh Roll On Feminins we've seen ever, I would say.
I would agree, although
as you will find out shortly, unfortunately, the result belies the fact that the race was very open.
Yes, no, I totally agree with you. Lizzie, do you want to remind the listeners, because you've written the tale of the attack today, or the catalogue of the classic, or I don't know, what could we call it? I mean, the catalogue would be really long. Hopefully it's not as long as that, Lizzie, but do you want to take us away on your summary of today's race for us?
I will do that indeed. 148.2 kilometres from Huy to the Mur de Huy, and what has become an uncharacteristically sunny day for La Flèche Wallon. It was Belgium's Lotte Klaas of Phoenix Premier Tech who took the honours as the first escapee of the day on her home roads, with more than 10 riders joining her to make the early break. After 50 kilometres out front, the break was caught as the peloton reached the local circuit, and the first time up the Mur de Huy, and it was EF Education Oatley and France's Axel Dubu-Prévot who launched out of the bunch, fuelled perhaps by the French fans who had just witnessed their chosen one, Paul Sexas, storm to the win in the men's race.
Whoa, Lizzie, Catherine. What? I mean, now you're just doing an advert for the other Arrivé.
Just, you know, we do actually know about men's cycling. We don't like to talk about it that much, but we're just acknowledging that it does also exist.
Yeah, the sideshow. The earlier sideshow.
Catherine Allerud of Uno X Mobility counterattacked, joining up with Axel Dubu-Prévot and quickly pulling the gap out to a minute. It was a strong FDJ who were forced to do the chasing as the gap to the break came down to 20 seconds at the Côte d'Aref and then yo-yoed out and in. The penultimate climb of the Côte de Chérave was suddenly upon us, and Elise Chabé shot herself out of the peloton like a Walloon arrow, shattering the bunch and leaving a small quiver of 11 of the best climbers. Uncharacteristic grimaces from Vollering gave us the sense that everything was still to play for. The final run into the Mur de Huy and Juliette Berthe came back to the front group just in time to give a monster pull, and she peeled off as Elise Chabé led the charge into the Mur de Huy. Vollering, Pieterse, Niviodoma, Ferrand-Prévot, Van der Breggen, Blasi and Valliere, all there. Vollering hit the front and set her own furious pace. 500 metres to go and her acceleration put daylight into all the rest. Niviodoma, Pieterse and Blasi and Valliere is battling now for the second spot. Vollering still ahead and didn't look back until 30 metres to go. A quick check that she had the win in the bag, but she saw Puck Pieterse charging towards her in a dying dash to the line. Vollering was forced to sprint, taking the win just a single bike length ahead of the 2025 champion Puck Peters, with Paula Blasi rounding out the podium to take her second huge result in 4 days after a solo win at Sunday's Amstel Gold Race. Nivea Doma was the best of the rest, Van der Breggen a very respectable fifth, with Valier, Ferran Prevot, Fisher Black, Isabella Holmgren and Ninka Vinka rounding out the top 10.
Yeah, it was almost like a jump scare, wasn't it, at the end when we saw Vollering, who had taken the front of that elite group of riders, pretty much for most of the Mer de Fuy. I mean, it was from like about 400 metres that she hit the front and then accelerated away. And then she, like you said, Lizzie, she looked behind and it was like, whoa, who's that? Put Peterson right on my wheel. Because she came storming through, and it was so thrilling, wasn't it? That just last 100 metres alone was so thrilling, because it's so hard to tell when the camera is foreshortening as well exactly how close everyone is. But you could see that Puk Peterson was like an absolute rocket. And I mean, it gives even more kudos, doesn't it, to Demi Vollering, that she, even after that phenomenal effort, she still had the legs for a sprint and out-sprinted Puk Peterson at the end.
It's also so hard to tell how far and how long they've got to go, because you see 50 metres, 25 metres, and you think, surely they're nearly there. And it just takes so long because they're going very fast, but it's just so steep. And the thing is, where Vollering was on the climb when she looked behind her and saw Puk Peterson rocketing towards her, it's that moment when you've done the hardest part and there's really just that little slightly flatter but still uphill bit to the line, and you think, okay, right, if I've won here, I can really take this time to savour the victory. And she couldn't. She really had to use everything that she had left to do that final sprint, and you could see how deep she had to go at the end. You know, it was a minute and a half, 2 minutes after the finish, and she just said to the people around her, "I'm sorry, I can't move, I can't get out of the way because I'm so exhausted." So it was interesting to see how different riders ride the Muir. Puk Peters had her own pace, and then that final acceleration, whereas Demi Vollering really went sort of from the bottom at one really hard speed. And there's different ways to skin a cat, I guess.
I mean, well, let's not skin cats, Lizzie. Hold on. I can't believe you, who is an absolute devoted cat fan, could even ever suggest.
Only perhaps a cat that's already dead that you want to preserve the memory of, a bit of taxidermy. Not a live cat, Rose. Come on.
I thought it was so interesting. Luckily, we didn't see anyone actually skin a cat on the coverage this time. But that foreshortening was also a bit of an optical illusion when Vollering actually first made her move, wasn't it? Because you couldn't really see that there was a gap at all. And it's like they turned around the curve on the Mer de Fuy, and then it was suddenly apparent there was this, she'd had quite a lot of daylight between her and the rest of the riders already with about 400 metres to go. I thought it was really interesting looking back at, I was intrigued to see how, cause she's got 2 second places the last two times she's done it in the previous 2 years. And then before that, she won it in 2023. So I was interested to see what happened on the last 2 years. And on the last 2 years, she was also at the front really early. Last year, she was kind of from a similar position in the front, but not kind of accelerating away as if to get away, but as if to set a really high tempo on everyone else. And looking back at 2024, which was the one which Kasia Nivea Doma won, she was on the front from a long, long way back. I mean, she had Juliette Labousse there kind of on the front, and then peeling off, and then Vollering again kind of set a really high tempo. And both times in those editions, Kasia Nivea Doma in 2024 and Puk Peterson in 2025, they both just sprinted at 150 metres to go. A bit like it's sort of similar position to where Puk Peterson sprinted today. They both sprinted there and just left her in the dust, even though she had done all the hard yards. She had taken control on the Mer de Fuy and she had set the pace, and she was just undone by that. So I thought it was a really interesting development that she's thought, the way I've been racing the Mer de Fuy these past few years has not been getting me the win. It's been getting me second place, which is pretty good. But I mean, she's just been out sprinted at the end. clearly she's gone away and thought about that and thought, how can I win this race? Because I can't win this race doing what I would, you know, want to do, what I'd be expecting to do. So I thought that was so intriguing. And I think it kind of adds that narrative that we had at the Tour of Flanders when we did the Arrivé together, didn't we, Lizzie? We were talking about what a mature performance it was from Demi Vollering, that she had, that we kind of seen the fruits of all her experience finally paying off now, because you can see that it's a lot more sort of less erratic, less kind of panicky, less feeling like she's being forced into a certain position, she has to ride a certain way. We're kind of seeing her as more of a leader of the peloton than we ever have before.
Yeah, I guess there's a few factors with that as well. It's that when she last won in 2023, she wasn't the same revered rider that she is today. And that's, I know that's difficult to say, because obviously in 2023 she won the Ardennes Triple Crown, the second rider ever to do so after her mentor at the time, Anna van der Breggen, won it a few years before. But, you know, at that point, those were almost her breakthrough wins. And that was the development of a superstar, whereas now she is that superstar. And as, again, we talked about in the Flanders Arrivé, between then and now, she's had all of these pressures to deal with, all of these moments where she has panicked. And then she's looked back on it and she's had to work out how to come through that. And she's just, yeah, we've spoken about this before. She seems to be a different person now, as well as a different rider, as well as, so importantly, having that support of the team. She went into the Muir de Huy in place number one, and there was never, having had an absolutely incredible lead out from Juliette Berthet and Elise Shebby, and not to mention the rest of the FDJ Suez teammates who worked like horses earlier in the race to make sure that FDJ were in control throughout the race, because they lost control of the race on Sunday at Amstel Gold and then got third. We'll talk about that later. And so she had this control from the start of the Muir de Huy to the finish of the Muir de Huy. Not once was there a rider with their wheel in front of her, not once the whole part along that. And for me, it's actually quite reminiscent of the Annemiek van Vleuten days, when Annemiek van Vleuten used to go into climbs, be it the Muir de Huy, be it the Giro d'Italia, because we didn't have the Tour de France Femmes at the time, and she would go full gas from the bottom because she knew that she was the strongest, and she just started the climb. She started in the first position and she finished in the first position. And I think it is a really interesting development to see, like you said, Rose, this climb is, of course, so, so different from a climb that we see in the Tour de France or the Giro d'Italia, because it's a couple of minutes. It's not 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour long. And so it's often different riders you see doing well here, but you still have to have the right tactics. In some ways, it's far more difficult than those climbs in the Tour de France, because in the end, the strongest rider will get to the top first. It doesn't matter if you're 10 meters back at the bottom of a Tour de France climb, the strongest person will prevail. Whereas here, if you come into the Muir de Huy 10 riders back, you know, 10th wheel, it is so much harder to get to the front. Whereas she started first, finished first, and there was never a moment's doubt in her mind that she could do that.
She also has been just thriving all season, though, hasn't she? I mean, looking back, she won two stages of Setmana Valenciana and the overall. She won Omloop, she won Dwars door Vlaanderen, she won the Ronde van Vlaanderen, and now she's won today. And those aren't, I mean, most of those are classics, of course, but they're quite different sets of skills. I think she's kind of proving herself as having, for not just being phenomenally strong, whether it is like the Muir de Huy, where it's a 2-minute intense effort with a bit of a sprint towards the end, or whether it's something that's a little bit more attritional, like Omloop, or whether it's stage racing like Setmana and Valenciana. I mean, it's quite ominous for the rest of the season how strong she's been on these slightly, you know, quite terrains that are as different as they can be for classics. And I think that's also another remarkable thing that we can say about her team, is that they've always been team efforts. We've seen so much from her team. And I think today was also as much of a team effort as this race can be, wasn't it? Because obviously you mentioned there on the Merde Fouille that Bertet and Chabé brought her into the Merde Fouille, but we saw Chabé make such a difference on the Côte de Chirave, didn't we, before that? Kind of whittled it down to 18 riders. I mean, if you look last year, it's kind of, you're getting kind of a group of almost about 18 riders all coming to the finish line at Merde Fouille. So she kind of whittled it down there with a really intense pressure. And then Berthe dropped off there under, you know, her teammates' pressure, and then managed to come back, bridged back across along with Ninka Vinka and Monica Trinka-Colonel, and then went to the front again. I mean, it's such extraordinary loyalty that we're seeing from FDJ as well.
Yeah, and earlier in the race as well, you know, Evita Music was in the early breakaway, nearly 60 kilometres she was in that breakaway. She was caught. And then later on, when the breakaway of two riders, Catherine Ullared and Axel Dubuprévost, were out, it was Evita Music and Leah Carinier and Ava Van Aert who was coming to the front and doing that work. And Evita Music was really, really drilling it on the front to bring this gap down. They hit the Côte d'Aref. FDJ came off the front. They'd done their work. No other teams took up the work. So then it was Leah Carinier who came back to the front, drilled it again, brought the gap down again. So there wasn't a single moment that Demi Vollering had to panic or didn't have faith that her team were there completely for her. And this is what we've discussed, you know, a few times in the past, where when I said, no, I don't think Elise Chabé or Franziska Koch, who wasn't there today having a well-deserved rest, finally, you know, I don't think they'll have it in the back of their mind that this is for them. Because when they get the chance, when they're given the card and said, go for it, yeah, they'll go for it. But when the team say, we're going all in for Demi, they will do it by the book. And that's exactly what we saw today from every single one of the riders, whether it was the work from Evita Music, which we didn't really see because it wasn't really on TV, or whether it was the work from Chabé and Berthe that we saw right in the end that was so critical to not only be physically in the right position, but to mentally have that confidence to really go for it and that everybody is on your side. And I really, really feel that that was a key piece, that sort of mental cognizance that everybody in the team is behind you. That was a key piece that was missing at SD Works.
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, it was a phenomenal podium, wasn't it, for Paola Blassi, who, I mean, this is an incredible week for her. We obviously saw her win Amstel Gold on Sunday. That was a real surprise win. We obviously seen that she's had very strong legs. She's part of the UAE team ADQ, and they've obviously been riding amazingly as a team this season. But Lizzie, this is remarkable, isn't it, for Paola Blassi to come in and be so confident on the Merde Fouille as well. I mean, in just totally elite company amongst so many champions of this race, and yet she was the one that was sort of bridging across to Demi Vollering. Yeah, what can we say about Paola Blassi and what a phenomenal week she's had so far? I mean, it could get even better, couldn't it?
Yeah, can you imagine if she went on to win Liège-Bastogne-Liège? That would be quite... I mean, this is her first time doing the Ardennes races, so that would be quite an entry into the Ardennes. I mean, yeah, what a week. She won... So for those who don't know, she won the Amstel Gold race on Sunday, the 20-kilometre breakaway, solo breakaway. And I think had she not have won this race, she wouldn't have come in... Sorry, if she hadn't have won Amstel Gold, she wouldn't have come into Flèche Wallonne as the leader. They would have perhaps ridden for Mavi Garcia or maybe even Erika Magnaldi or Maeve Esquibin. And so she's sort of got thrown into this position and got an absolute shed load of confidence as well from sort of realising quite how strong she is. And there were signs, but honestly, she has the most fascinating story because it's been... such a rapid rise. We talk about rapid rises through cycling, but she only started not professional cycling, domestic cycling in 2024. She was a triathlete. She was injured and she thought, well, I can't do the running, so I'll just start cycling. She started competing at the Spanish national level races, second in her first race, later went on to win four of the rounds, Then she went to Tour de l'Avenir with the Spanish national team, and she came third on the Queen stage up Colle delle Finestre, no less, and fourth on the GC. So it was this around this time that she was noticed by the UAE development team, which she signed for in 2025. And then already in 2025, she had a handful of wins at 1.1 races. She was moved up from their development team to their World Tour team in May because she was so good. And most notably last year, she won at the uphill time trial to Villars at the Women's World Tour Tour de Romandie. And I think that was when I first saw her, first noticed her and thought, hold on a second, who's this Paula Blasi that I'd never heard of before? She then, in October, went on to win the under-23 European Road Race Championships. So what a start. I mean, second-year professional, third-year just racing at all, and she's already winning Amstel Gold Race. And I think what we've seen from the Amstel Gold Race, where she said she was struggling so much in the peloton because it's such a difficult race, so many punchy climbs, the fight for position there is, it's like a hilly version of Roubaix in terms of the fight for position. And once she got off the front, it was actually easier for her because she could use her strength. She wasn't using her strength to get back every time that she was dropped because she was out of position. She was just using her strength on its own. And Demi Vollering and Kasia Niewiadoma spoke after Amstel Gold about sort of, you know, perhaps Kasia Niewiadoma didn't have the teammates to pull it back, or perhaps they started too late, Demi Vollering said. But at the end of the day, Blasi was just very, very strong in front. And so, yeah, she seems to have used that confidence and come in full gas to Flèche Wallonne, taking a very impressive third place ahead of Kasia Niewiadoma, who we must say had a mechanical. She couldn't get out of the big ring. So she was going
that's
up.
Brutal.
Yeah, you could kind of see her grinding up out of the saddle like she often is. But, you know, when you look back at it, you can see quite how slow her cadence was compared to the other riders. But yeah, phenomenal, phenomenal entry into the Ardennes Classics for Paula Blasi. And I think she will be one to watch going into Sunday's Liège-Bastogne-Liège because she has a whole load of confidence coming off of these two rides and she doesn't even know what she's capable of yet.
I think what's so promising also for Paula Blasi is that a lot of the time when you have these riders who have swapped over from other sports recently, they never quite develop the same level of racecraft as those people who've been racing for a very long time on bikes. And they do have that thing where they're a bit like Mavi Garcia, her teammate, in fact. They always have a fear of being fighting for position in the pack and always want to be out the front. And then as soon as people are aware of them, it's very hard to then continue to perform because it's kind of like, oh, well, we know what, say, Mavi Garcia is doing when she tries to get away. If we just kind of bring her back in, you know, that's her only way of winning is to get away from the rest of us. But because of the fact that Paula Blasi, well, for one thing, has a huge amount of confidence because that's the way that she rides. But she's only 23.
Yeah.
I mean, so as much as she's swapping over, she's still a young rider. I was going to say young person, but then I felt suddenly so old by saying young person.
No, well, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking, oh, she's such a young person. But it's true, you know. She came into domestic cycling at 21, which is still very young. And it's not like she hadn't been riding a bike. She had, of course, been riding a bike because she was a triathlete. But, you know, as is often the way with triathletes, cycling is sort of the third sport because you have to be a really, really good runner. You can't be a bad swimmer, but you can get away with being a pretty, oh, I don't mean to offend the whole triathlete community here, but you can get away with being a pretty mediocre cyclist because it's not the cycling in triathlon that usually makes the difference. It's usually the running. And so I think it's that youth, that the fact that she obviously had that huge engine, the youth and the lack of fear that's allowed her to do this. And I think she's only going to get better as she gets used to the peloton, learns how to navigate it, but also gets more respect. Once you've won Amstel Gold Race and come third in Flèche Wallonne, people start noticing who you are. You know, they don't think that you're just nobody and then they block you off. We heard Magdalene Valliere in your Kilometre Zero with her, Rose, talking about how it's much easier to move through the peloton now. The more respect you get as a rider, generally the easier it is to move through. So Although in some respects, things will get difficult because it's not like she's going to be allowed into a breakaway because she's it's going to get shut down if they can shut it down. But she will, I think it will get easier for her in that she will get more respect. She'll learn how to move through the peloton and she'll just, yeah, she's obviously very, very quickly learning the racecraft to be able to even be in the position to get these results that she's getting now.
It's a perfect team for her, isn't it? Also, UAE-ADQ, because they have quite a lot of cards to play, but they're not so single focused on one particular rider. It's not a team built around one rider. Obviously, they have phenomenal riders like Elisa Lungo Borghini there, but I mean, we saw it actually at the Tour Down Under, didn't we? They did kind of fluff it up in the end, but we had that final stage when it was Noemi Rugg of EF versus three riders from UAE, which was Vlahovic, Paola Blasi, and I can't remember who the third person was. Oh, Mavi Garcia.
Yeah,
talking about Mavi Garcia. I just went. So they had the three UAE riders against Noemi Rugg, and Noemi Rugg won, so they kind of messed it up. But
that was funny.
But I mean, it obviously showed that Paola Blasi, even at the beginning of the season, was on terms with the likes of Mavi Garcia and Dominika Vlahovic, and Noemi Rugg are far more established riders in the peloton, and she was kind of as good as they were. But they have lots of cards to play, don't they? And they're willing to also be flexible. It's like, okay, it's not really working for me, but let's ride for you instead. They have that kind of fluid dynamic as a team. So I think it's a really good fit for her. I mean, like with Flèche Wallonne, I mean, I'm sure there are some teams that even if she had won Amstel Gold, would still not have put her as the leader.
They wouldn't deviate from the plan, had happened.
They would still be like, okay, yeah, but you know, this is Kashyna Wiedoma's race, say, and so we're going to ride for Kashyna Wiedoma, whether you've won Amstel just a few days ago or not. So it's a really great team for her, and a team I think that are going to really support her in what comes next. I mentioned there, obviously, Kashyna Wiedoma. We should mention her, obviously, she is a former champion at Flèche Wallonne. I mean, this kind of broke her very long wind drought, didn't it, a couple of years ago. She hasn't managed to back it up here. I mean, you said, of course, Lizzie, that she had a mechanical, which meant she was in the big ring, which didn't help. But we didn't see much from her team either, did we? I mean, it's kind of stark contrast with the likes of FDJ, who had so many numbers. EF had so many numbers. UAE had numbers. But yeah, I mean, Canyon-SRAM kind of quite obviously didn't have numbers. It was just Kashyna Wiedoma for most of the coverage that we saw.
Well, today I would say she actually had a big team compared to what she had at Amstel Gold Race. Today we did see for at least some of the coverage that Cecilia Uttrup-Ludwig and Antonia Niedermayer were with her. But an interesting little snippet I noticed actually on the FDJ Suez's YouTube, where they had a rundown of the Amstel Gold Race. And at the end of the race, there was a moment where Demi Vollering and Kashyna Wiedoma were both bent over their handlebars, exhausted. Demi looked over to Kashyna and said, "Where were your teammates?" And Kashyna didn't say anything, but gave an exasperated and very telling sigh. And it was only, I think, 50 kilometres we saw of Amstel Gold Race on Sunday on the TV, but we didn't see a single one of Kashyna Wiedoma's teammates there throughout that. And it's very, very difficult. And so often in these situations, whether her teammates are there or not, Kashyna doesn't have the support that's required from a team of her level. And she has been so loyal to Canyon-SRAM for so many years, and they have been so loyal to her. But the end of 2026 is the end of her current contract. And I've got a question for you, actually, Rose. Where would you like to see Kashyna Wiedoma go? And I know what I think, because I've been thinking about this all day, but I thought I would just spring this on you.
Oh, great. And thanks, Lizzie. Yeah.
Because okay, it is so curious. Do you think she'll stay? Do you want her to stay? Where would you like her to go?
I don't think she should stay at Canyon-SRAM. I mean, she's been there, it must be, I think, 9 years that she's been there. I mean, she's for most of those years, she's been kind of the out and out leader of that team. But it's just not working. And I think for her, it must be quite frustrating seeing people like, well, Lise Chabet, for example, who was...
her former loyal domestique.
Former loyal domestique for many years, and was also kind of just an integral part of that Canyon-SRAM team. Mm. And to see her suddenly this year, immediately, you know, she goes to FDJ Suez and just be immediately... a really important domestique there, and a, you know, a winner actually herself as well, but you know, more importantly, I guess, from Kasia's perspective, to see her really changing the shape of so many of the classics that we've seen this season as a domestique, that must be really frustrating for Kasia Niewiadoma, to be like, why could we not harness Elise Chabet's sort of power and ability and use that for me? Why is that now that power being used against me effectively, because it's being used for one of, you know, her great rival Demi Vollering? So that's frustrating. I also thought, I also noticed like Ricarda Baumfind also, you know, she's gone to Lidl Trek and she was in the break today as well. So it's kind of seeing all these riders leave and then do more. It must leave Kasia Niewiadoma with some questions that maybe she could do more as well. I've really deflected there, Lizzie.
Well, shall I give you my answer and
yes,
you
on,
can have a little
can,
bit more time
yeah,
to think
yeah.
about it?
Go
well,
on.
I think there's a, I've got a sort of, you know, down the line option and a left field option. And I think the kind of the obvious answer right now would be Lidl Trek. And I think Lidl Trek are missing that leader, that out and out leader, someone like Kasia Niewiadoma, who I say can win races. We know she often struggles to finish it off, but how much of that is down to not having the team around her? And I think that there are other riders in Lidl Trek who would benefit from Kasia Niewiadoma's presence. And I think it would give the whole team a better chance to win, whether it's with Kasia or with someone else. I think my left field option would be a team like Fenix Premier Tech. Mm. You know, perhaps... I don't really want to see her have a Rabobank reunion and go off to Jumbo Visma, because I want the talent to be spread across the board. But I think if she went to somewhere like Fenix Premier Tech, perhaps she could be the female Mathieu van der Poel on that team, potentially. And Puk Pieterse is their climber, but she's busy with other things. She does cyclocross, she does mountain biking. But I also think the duo of Puk and Niewiadoma would work quite well. So I also strongly feel that she should leave Canyon-SRAM. I think that tactically they are not where they should be. They're not where a World Tour team should be. They had this one sort of short period of with a glimmer of hope when Magnus Backsted was there for a year and a half, maybe, but he sort of had a bit of a falling out with them and they parted ways. And then since then, I think their tactics went downhill again and their teamwork went downhill again. I feel like Magnus Backsted brought the whole team together. He allowed them to gel and to really understand how to work for each other. But it seems to me that the, you know, sometimes you can have one rider come into a cheat team and it can change the dynamic completely. But it seems to me that it's the team's ethos, the team's character, which is the reason that they race in a particular way, not one rider coming in and out. So yeah, Lidl Trek or left field Fenix Premier Tech.
I like the Fenix. I was actually thinking Fenix Premier Tech, I think for the reasons you said also, Lizzie, that, you know, Puk Pieterse goes off and does mountain biking and things. She's not kind of always there. I think Movistar would be also a good place
with
for
Malin
her
Rosa?
To go. Yeah, because they're different enough riders. I think that would make them extremely strong, very dangerous. It might become a bit of an issue for them. But don't we love a little bit of that kind of teammates who are also rivals type narrative? But they are very different riders, aren't they? Marlon Roycer and Kasia Niewiadoma, they ride in a different style entirely. Yeah. So it might be a little problematic when you get something like the Tour de France and they both want to go for it. But,
you could see with the classics,
I mean, it could be a really strong
pair. You could see with a pairing like those two, they could both get on the podium.
Yeah.
You know, they are such sort of, yeah, you say different riders, but they're also so dangerous if you put them together. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the pairing of Vollering and Roycer that we saw again, you know, Kashin Iwidemo isn't the same rider that Demi Vollering is. But when Reusser was paired with Vollering back at SD Works, they were such a dangerous pairing. And they won races together. Sometimes it was Reusser, sometimes, well, more often than not, it was Vollering. But the threat of having one of those two behind, that was where the magic came from.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. You know, you could have, with Nivedoma and Reusser together, then, you know, you're either, do I waste my legs trying to keep hold of Marlon Reusser and not let her slip out of my grasp, or and leave myself open to all these kind of punchy attacks from Kashin Iwidemo. It would be a really hard dynamic to keep a lid on.
I like how we are really delving into the realms of speculation. And I think with Movistar, you know, they have young talent that they're investing in. They have the Ruiz Perez twins. They have Kat Ferguson, Karis Lloyd, British talent. And of course they have Marlon Reusser. So I'm not sure there would be space.
You think it's
for her
too stacked?
On their roster.
Mm. It's too stacked.
Where I feel like Little Trek, they need her she needs them.
My worry with Little Trek would be that it would just turn out similarly to, I think they're a more well-drilled team than Canyon-SRAM are, but I wonder if Kashin Iwidemo needs a team where there are other leaders. I think maybe the problem is the pressure of being every single race, whether it's a classics race, whether it's a stage race, whether it's a grand tour, she is the leader. And that's how it is every single race. I think that is part of a problem. It's, you know, it's kind of nullifies
the lack of diversity.
The lack of diversity, the lack of other cards to play. I think that's a problem because I think, you know, as strong as Kashin Iwidemo is, kind of everyone knows what her tactic is, don't they? You know, they know that she's going to be...
She's kind of got one card.
She's kind of got
you know,
one card.
Punchy,
it's kind of
acceleration.
Super aggressive, super punchy, really, really hard to keep with when she does that. I mean, a phenomenal rider. But because she's just got that one card, you need other riders that it's like, we don't know whether to guard against Kasia's effort or we don't know whether to guard against someone else's effort. Whereas I think if you went to Little Trek, then it's kind of like, again, oh, right, well, I think Kashin Iwidemo might be the leader here.
But I don't know, though. You know, we were talking about Fleur Moors before, and she had an exceptional ride at Amstel Gold Race. And she's really been flying through this classics. And I think that she's the biggest breakout who isn't
the biggest
the
rider.
Most obvious.
The biggest rider in the peloton.
Sorry,
today.
Just so excited about her. I'm getting my knickers and my tongue in a twist. The biggest breakout rider who wasn't the most obvious breakout rider. You know, I think, you know, now you might say a Paula Blasi, biggest breakout. But Fleur Moors, although she didn't have that one giant result, she was just so promising to see her right up there in a race like Amstel Gold Race. I think that this talent that Little Trek have been developing in their phase as a development team, which I so rudely called them the other day, I think it will become fruitful with riders like Fleur Moors and the Holmgrens. And perhaps 2027 is their year with Nivedoma.
I love how, Lizzie, you have been talking about Flesh Wallon for all of these months. When I was asking about who's everyone's favourite classic was, you said, oh, well, not the cobble classics. It's got to be Flesh Wallon for me, blah, blah. All of these months of bigging up Flesh Wallon, and then you've now just led us down a garden path and we're speculating about teams to come in future seasons. We're not even talking about Flesh Wallon.
Hold on, Rose. It's not, you know, I've not let you down. It's Flesh Wallon who's let me down.
Yes, that's true.
I'm the victim here.
We haven't given any mention really to the queen of Flesh Wallon, and that is Anna van der Breggen, 7-time winner at the top of Mer de Huy. She obviously finished, you said, a very respectable fifth. Is that
fifth
what you...
Fifth place, yeah.
Fifth place, Lizzie. And we saw at the end her post-race interview where she was kind of coming around to the fact that, yes, she was quite sort of happy with fifth. She had been kind of quite disappointed. But it was surprising how, I mean, SD Works were largely sort of absent, but even when in their winning days, they kind of managed to be sort of largely absent. So that doesn't really necessarily tell us much about their form, doesn't it? But yeah, how do you think Anna van der Breggen... Do you think she'll go away with this happy? I know she seemed kind of satisfied with it, but it must be a bit frustrating to kind of make this big comeback to the peloton and go to the race that you've won seven times. I don't think that she thought for a moment that she would win it today. But do you think she's probably thinking, this is a bit harder, this comeback is going to be a bit harder than I had anticipated?
Interesting question. I mean, I think from her ride today, it was fascinating watching her interview as she started by saying that she was disappointed and so difficult having won here so many times before. And you saw the psychological process of her sort of talking almost with a therapist, but it was just an interviewer and coming around saying, well, you know, actually, maybe it wasn't too bad. And the gaps were much smaller. And she's right. When Demi Vollering won back in 2023, it was, I think, 5 or 7 seconds to second place, which doesn't sound like much, but on the Muir de Huy, that is quite a lot. And there are a lot of riders in the top 10 in quite a, you know, in a small space of time today. So I've forgotten what you asked me, Rose. Is she satisfied?
Is she going to have been satisfied? Yeah, satisfied with that performance?
Yeah, I think that, you know, already over the space of a minute when she was discussing it with the interviewer, she realised, actually, it's really not that bad. And actually, we were pretty close. I think it's difficult. I think she did know what she was coming back into, because she was the DS of SD Works, of course. She was the coach of Demi Vollering and the other riders on SD Works. And she could see the raw power data in front of her. When she talked about coming back, she said that women's cycling wasn't in the same place as it was when she left, and she knew she had more work to do. She was the out and out strongest in women's cycling for so many years. And it's great that there are other people now, but obviously it makes it much harder. I think she is in a different place as a rider, though. Perhaps we'll see her supporting Ninka Vinka in Liège Best on Liège. What do you think? Ninka Vinka's had a really brilliant season so far. 10th today in Flèche Wallonne.
She was 10th today in Flèche Wallonne, and she was in that breakaway with Paola Blasi, wasn't she, Amstel?
And she was really resisting being caught. Although Paola Blasi rode away from Ninka Vinka, Ninka Vinka was still behind her and still couldn't be caught by a very strong FDJ Suez chasing behind. So really, really interesting to see what she could do if she were perhaps given leadership and given a chance.
That would be delight in the ears of course, Ninka Vinka fan club president Rebecca Charlton, who would be delighted to hear that. Although, you know, the fan club president, she is quite fickle. So, you know, if it's not a win, she's probably going to start the Lauren Avibus fan club by now. She's a fickle
president. I was thinking about Becca Charlton when Lotta Klaas was in the breakaway earlier today. And I thought, oh, well, Becca will be very happy sitting there with her Lotta Klaas jumper on.
Yes, exactly.
And by the end of the race, she'd switched to the Ninka Vinka fan club, and she messaged us to let us know that she was very, very happy with Ninka Vinka's performance.
So what more could Ninka Vinka do, maybe at Liège Best on Liège? Well, how many waffles are you giving that, Lizzie? How many? It's a hard one,
I've thought about this.
You've thought about your waffles?
I'm going with 3, but 3 out of 10, Rose.
Oh, that's
you know what?
Brutal.
If Puck Peters hadn't given me that 25 to 30 metres of adrenaline, it would have been a 2.
Wow.
And that's a case of expectations. You know, I came in with very high expectations and disappointed.
I think it was more of I would say on the waffleometer, more middling for me. I would give it a sort of a 5 or 6, maybe a 6,
come
actually.
Come on,
6 out of 10.
You gave Flanders a 6 or a 5.
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, but I don't have much expectation for Flèche Wallonne. To me, Flèche Wallonne is just that final climb up the Muir de Huy, largely. And you have to say, if you took just that climb compared to all the other just the climbs of previous Flèche Wallonnes, this would rank pretty highly, wouldn't it? Because it was quite thrilling. The gap that Demi Vollering made quite early, you think, oh, you've gone too early. Everyone always says on the Muir de Huy, you've got to save your effort. And then she went, and then that Puk Peterson was like a rocket at the end. If you took just that last 800 metres of this race and compared it to the last 800 metres of all the previous editions, this would rank pretty high. So that's why I'm going to go for a good 5 out of 10 waffles, which
okay,
is actually an amount that could probably eat.
If we upgrade to the last 500 metres of the race, I will upgrade from 3 to 4 out of 10 waffles.
Wow.
Deal.
Flesh Wallon has really let you down, Lizzie. We won't be hearing much from Flesh Wallon for in the years to come from you, I'm sure.
No, I'm sure it'll be back. The women's race has provided a lot of excitement for many years. And this is, you know, we all have a bad day, even Flesh Wallon.
Even Flesh Wallon. Well, that's a perfect place to end it. Thank you very much for joining me, Lizzie.
Thank you very much, Rose.
And yes, we will be back with an arrivé from Liège-Bastogne-Liège, the final Ardennes classic of this season. But yes, until then, thank you very much for listening.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.